I told them folks? I said, you all can go to hell. I'm going to Texas.
Brief, but I don't know if I'm worthy enough to have that title as of yet. But this is Aaron Barker again. I'm in the chat room as well right now. But hey, this is the officially unofficial PR department of the Veritas Radio Network from the Never Gillette Studios in the rolling hills of the Bluegrass State. And we are broadcasting live right now on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at thecrusadechannel.com or crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. I really do just want to take a minute before we get into it and the, let the nerves kind of settle here. But super grateful for the opportunity right now that you all are giving me here, especially to Mike for the opportunity to be here. And I appreciate the opportunity to be in your vehicle, office, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, henhouse, outhouse, and doghouse, wherever you might be listening to this. And much appreciated. I got a lot of family members as well. So hopefully the chat room will increase with all my family members who want to mock point and make fun of me. Right now on the show, which if you would like to join in with all of that, you can join into the only true social media out there. The only true social media worth having is online at crusadechannel.com/chat. It's a no troll zone, so don't go in there trolling, dropping all your crazy stuff in there. Just go in there and enjoy yourself. You might make a few friends. You can actually leave comments there, questions, disagreements even. I welcome disagreements, and if I don't like you, then I'll just ignore you. And you can interact with the Crusaders there as well as the hosts throughout the day. So it'll be you can talk with me and also Barrett, who's riding shotgun with me. Barrett, how you doing today, brother?
I am – well, let me actually do my correct – howdy and good morning, Mr. Barker. I am well down here in the beautiful hill country of Texas, in the Republic of Texas. Very, very excited to run shotgun with you today, my friend. I'm very excited for you. We are absolutely so pumped to have you on air with us today. And yeah, let's go. CrusadeChannel.com/chat. We have the bleacher section for me, right? I have the bleacher creatures. I know Corey has the bleacher section. I know he has his own way to call the Crusader Stadium. I think we're going to have to call the Mr. Barker's Crusader Stadium the Dog Pound. So let's get into the Dog Pound, folks, and let's have a good time. CrusadeChannel.com/chat. It is free. Just an email, username, and a password, and you are good to go. So, yeah, I'm ready to go, Mr. Barker.
Fantastic. I appreciate that. Dog Pound. That sounds pretty good. It's better than having people call me Bob, which, although the generation that knew who Bob Barker was is pretty much old now and they forget. So I don't get that much anymore.
You know, but when you say that, all I hear is Happy Gilmore, right?
That's every single time.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. Okay, I apologize.
It's either Bob or we got Baker a lot growing up. Like, no, neither of those, you know. But yeah, we got Bob Barker all the time. But hey. I guess it's a good name. I like it. Got some good stock. But also, you know what? Now, I am going to say here the phone number as well, which is 844-527-8723. I'm going to open the lines up today all day. So if there's anything that you want to talk about whatsoever, you can call 844-527-8723. Now, traditionally, not a lot of calls, but I would really like if you give a call today, what I'll do is I'll make sure you get 30 days free on the Crusade Channel. All you have to do is just go to crusadechannel.com for the free 30 days founder pass for that. But if you call in, I'll give you that for free. But we're going to talk about a few things. You're in Austin down there, and I got a story we were talking about before. I'm going to discuss a little bit later. I'm coming out of Austin, and it is treacherous and terrible, and I want to make sure that we get that because I want to get your take on it, Barrett. But we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton's recent comments at the Elijah Cummings funeral. We're going to be talking about the attack against masculinity. We'll be dispensing later on in the show. I'll be dispensing some marriage advice that nobody is going to want to miss. So, dudes, make sure you stay tuned in to the show for some assistance. You know, I've been married for 18 years, know a little bit about what not to do So I want to give you some advice there on cherishing your wife, improving your role as the man of the home, and also dudettes. If you're listening and your husbands or fiancés are not in the room and they're not around, call them up. Tell them to tune in because they're not going to want to miss this. I have really two pieces of very important advice when I'm dispensing marriage counseling at all. And that's one, don't do the dumb things I've done. And second one is, again, don't do the dumb things I've done. And then we're going to hit the fan favorites. Of course, you're going to do the 10 things the AP thinks you should know and the significant digits later on in the show. But first, because of this whole Kanye West controversy, I've got to thinking about a lot of these different celebrity pop stars that are coming out trying to make their own mark in the world when it's either politics or religion or something like that. And I love it when people become involved in the political process. But what I don't like is when silly, idiotic things are said in the political process. So with Kanye West being so popular, I wanted to bring up something that Taylor Swift had talked about, because there's that whole feud that's been going on with Taylor Swift and Kanye since 2009 when he took the mic from her and said, I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce is better than you. So that kind of drove her a little crazy there. And then, of course, the past several years, it's been going back and forth with that. But I'm sure you can find that video online right now. I'm sure Kanye feels pretty bad about that, hopefully. But anyway, back in August, Miss Swift did an interview with The Guardian. And in this interview, she was talking about her disillusion with American values in an exclusive interview with them. Now, to be honest with you, what Taylor Swift has to say about politics actually really doesn't mean a whole lot of anything to me. But what I think we can learn from this is a nice solid lesson in logic. So whenever we have people that start to involve themselves and start to try to give directions and start to try to give what they feel the direction of the country is, I think it's very important that we learn and understand how to refute silly logic that people have. First, in this interview, she said that she began feeling conflicted when about the U.S. With what the U.S. stood for, when all the dirtiest tricks in the book were used and it worked. She's referencing the election and the win of Donald Trump. The Pennsylvania-born musician described the atmosphere in her home country as gaslighting the American public into, like, if you hate the president, you hate America. Now, first, just a quick thing. That's not gaslighting. When she's talking about the American public, either you love Trump or you hate America, that's not gaslighting. That's actually a false dichotomy. That's the logical fallacy of a false dichotomy, because she's presenting two options when there are myriad other options that are available. So you can either disagree with President Trump and still love your country, or you can dislike President Trump and hope he dies and still love your country. There's all kinds of different nuances that exist back in that. So she can't say that. So the first thing you want to realize is that when you're dealing with someone that is discussing these types of things, there is a logical consistency that they have to follow, because their own premise begins to refute their arguments if you don't notice what that is and start to point that out, because you don't want to argue with someone who has faulty logic. The first thing you want to do is step back, define your terms, and make sure that logically you're on the same playing field. So there's no gaslighting going on right there. Gaslighting is saying something like men can be women and men can also be on their periods. That's gaslighting. Making people question their reality is gaslighting. But another thing that she says in this story is that she's obviously pro-life or pro-choice. She's obviously pro-choice. Now, when she says obviously, to what exactly is she referring? Is she referring to the fact that, oh, well, I'm Taylor Swift, so obviously because I'm so well-educated and well-versed and well-knowledged in this particular abortion knowledge here, that obviously I am pro-choice? Is she saying obviously because the evidence that's out there is so obvious that it presents the fact that we can be pro-choice, that we can abort our children? Or is she what is she referring to here? This is actually what's called the common sense fallacy, which is a lack of evidence, and she's trying to appeal to her own authority by saying that obviously the information that's presented here makes sense. It's common sense. It's also called the common sense fallacy. So just because she thinks her article makes sense or that it's obvious doesn't appeal to any specific or real evidence. A lot of people use that particular method to get out of actually presenting anything that's solid or anything that's foundational proof. She can say, well, obviously the Cincinnati Bengals are the best team in the NFL right now, which is obviously not true. But for her to say that, she's presenting absolutely no evidence for that. Now, again, I have some stuff that I want to get into later in the show about abortion, but right now this isn't about that. What this is about, it's about noticing when people start to present logical fallacies and having the ability to refute those. It's the ability to have a conversation with someone so that they don't run off and start taking you on their own premise. That's the worst thing that you can possibly do. Evolutionists are awesome at this as well. They've really used this. They've really mastered that. They'll say something like, well, we have 98% of the same DNA of an ape. We have opposable thumbs and can communicate intelligently. Obviously, we have a common ancestor. Well, that proof means absolutely nothing. So don't let anybody do that to you in an argument. Just ask them a very simple question. Show me this obvious evidence of which you speak. Now, of course, they'll reply with something like, well, it's common sense right in front of you. Stupid American. I don't know. I guess all evolutionists speak with a British accent, a poor British accent. But it makes them sound smarter, I guess. Maybe I'll do the rest of the show in a British accent or not. But they'll reply something like, it's common sense right in front of you. Well, if it's common sense, and it's right in front of me, it's not hard to point out. Just show me the evidence. Just one piece of evidence. Well, it's in the fossil record. Well, show me just one. Well, there's millions of them. Well, if there are millions of them, just show me one. All I need is one. I'm not looking for millions. I'm not looking for tons. I'm just looking for one. And they'll do that because it gets them out of the position of actually trying to produce any evidence. And it makes you also stand on this defense. You automatically have to take up the position of defending you or defending what you say or defending what you stand. They'll put you on that, and they put the onus on you to show them why it's not, which is, again, another logical fallacy, the proof of a negative. So, honestly, in all of these things, the only thing we have to do, especially when it comes to Taylor Swift, because she is such an accomplished academic, such an accomplished person here when it comes to education, we have to take her very seriously. Because in this day and age, when people like LeBron James and Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift are telling us that our country is going down the tubes because of Mr. Trump, we have to be able to have logical, common sense arguments with them. But, you know, you may like Tay-Tay, and you may think that Tay-Tay got some good stuff to say. And you can call me about that if you'd like to. 844-527-8723 is the number. You know, another thing that she does that a lot of folks do lately is what I find extremely annoying is this whole, we're a democracy. We live in a democracy. We live in a democracy, at least we're supposed to be, where you're allowed to disagree, dissent, and debate. I really think that Trump thinks this is an autocracy. She's got a lot of big words. I'm very proud of her. She must have like the word of the day toilet paper. But when she says we're a democracy, she's also wrong again on that. We're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. And we do also agree, Ms. Swift, that we should be allowed to disagree, dissent, and debate. But whenever conservatives disagree, dissent, and debate, we're called haters. We're called judgmental bigots. We're told we're not supposed to argue. Don't judge me. Jesus didn't judge anybody. They haven't read all of Matthew chapter 7, but doesn't matter because it really doesn't matter what they think about true dissent and true disagreement. So when you read these stories, when you look through these, look for those logical inconsistencies. Look for the fact that we're being told that we are not allowed to disagree, and we're not allowed to debate. We actually have a story coming up later in the show, which shows the fact that disagreement and debate, when it comes to Christian issues or morality issues, is not welcome. It's just not welcome. 844-527-8723. Call me about Tay-Tay if you'd like to. Let me know what you have to say about her. You know, also, right before the show, I had this in my show notes, but right before the show, I got a text from my father-in-law, and he let me know that this morning on the Fox and Friends, that I don't know if you consider this breaking news or not, But the forensic pathologist who observed Jeffrey Epstein's autopsy says that the fatal injuries are more consistent with homicide than suicide. Gasp! Oh, goodness. I should have told you all to sit down and pull over if you were driving. I don't consider this breaking news.
Aaron.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just have to jump in. The only thing that's breaking about that news was his neck. Anyway, I'll go back to you.
That's a perfect break-in right there. Oh, another pun there. But yeah, it's nobody. There's not one person. Well, see, I almost committed a logical fallacy myself by appealing to the to a consensus. The evidence that was presented on this and the speculation from the very beginning on this and the reputation that the Clintons had pointed us to think that there was absolutely no way that this gentleman hung himself without some type of assistance. But the guy who said it, we're not talking about like a backyard pathologist. We're not talking about somebody that the conservatives dug up from, you know, Wamboo, Omaha, that wants to make a name on Fox News. This is Dr. Michael Baden. I'm not sure if it's either Baden or Baden, but he's the guy that he had the show Autopsy. He was he's now actually a private consultant, and he consulted on John Belushi's. He actually investigated John Belushi's death, Sid Vicious's death. He was one of the opinions. He was one of the guys giving the opinions for the O.J. Simpson trial, which I thought was fascinating because in the O.J. Simpson trial, just as a quick side shot here, the O.J. Simpson trial, he wasn't on that, but he said that there's a picture of Nicole Brown Simpson as she's laying there on her side of the scene there. And he said on her back, I believe is where it was a small drop of blood. And he said that if they could have tested that small drop of blood, it's very possible that they could have put OJ at that crime because of DNA. He never said that it's an absolute for sure thing. Obviously, he's a scientist. He follows the true scientific method, observable, testable, repeatable. He had to find that information. But this is the kind of guy he is. He was a medical examiner in New York. Honestly, look this guy up if you want to know who I'm talking about. He consulted with Brown's family. What was his name? The gentleman that was shot. Let's see. Yeah, Michael Brown. He was a consultant on there as well. So this isn't some Johnny-come-lately guy. He said that in 50 years plus of examining dead bodies, he has never seen a suicidal hanging case where the individual had two fractures in the thyroid cartilage and a fracture in the hyoid bone. I say that as if you understand what all that is, because as the host, I'm going to act like I understand what that is and then make you think I'm really smart. But he continues, those three fractures are extremely unusual in suicidal hangings and could occur much more commonly in homicidal strangulation. He said that he's not seen in 50 years where that occurred in a suicidal hanging case. Now, we've speculated for quite some time about that. But as of right now, we are at a point where we know by his evidence, what he's presenting, that our position that Epstein didn't kill himself is much more solid and has much more ground than what we did and what it appeared like before. Now, does that make me happy? No, it doesn't make me happy at all. The Bible is very clear that we do not rejoice in the death of the wicked one bit. However, it's very interesting that this evidence is coming out, especially with such a high-profile pathologist like this. But I would also like to say that I send my condolences to Dr. Michael Baden's family on his horrible suicide coming up next week. 844-527-8723. Is the number. And if you would like to also jump in there with the Crusade chat room, you can. The Crusader Stadium, which Barrett has nicknamed the Dog Pound right now, so I'll run with that. You can go into the Crusader Stadium Dog Pound, crusadechannel.com/chat. It is the last bastion of true socialization and true social media online, no troll zone. Go there, leave a comment, leave a question. You can also hit me up on Facebook or Twitter. Twitter is at breakdradio.com. Again, that's at breakdradio.com. I'm sorry, at breakdradio.com. When we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about stuff as well as the same thing. Keep locked in right here.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel. It's actually the Barker Brief today. Mr. Aaron Barker is filling in for me right now. We're getting him reconnected back from Kentucky. From Covington, Kentucky, actually. I had the great fortune of having Mr. Aaron Barker. It is his show today. I am just riding shotgun with him. I think he's back with us. Mr. Barker?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Barker Brief. And here is Mr. Aaron Barker.
I'm not sure who's censoring us today. I don't know if it's the neocon.
Tay-Tay.
She jumped in there already.
That's right.
She's all over it. She doesn't like my logical dissertation on what she said there. But anyway, yeah, well, I am Aaron Barker. I'm the last picked in dodgeball sitting in here for Richard on the Barrett Brief. So I was enjoying that bumper music, too. So anyway, so we're going to go on with a fan favorite here that Mr. Barit has done so well in the past of strengthening, and that is the top 10 things that the AP thinks that you should know. And it's pretty interesting when you look at these stories. What I like about this particular segment is the fact that the AP attempts to shape what you're thinking and shape your worldview by telling you what they think is the most important for you to need to know. But I'm going to do it a little differently. I'm going to go at it as a countdown. So I'm going to go from the number 10 all the way to the number 1. So bear with me on that if you wouldn't mind. If you'd like to call in also on any of the stories that I talk about during this, 844-527-8723. Also, crusadechannel.com/chat if you'd like to chat in the room there as well. The first thing, or the number 10 thing, I don't have a drum roll or anything like that. I'm not that much of an advanced production yet. But the number 10 thing the AP thinks you should know is that the Nationals force deciding Game 7. So Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon led Washington to a 7-2 win over Houston, continuing a pattern where the road team has won every game in the World Series. So now I'm not a sports guy. Well, I'm a Cincinnati fan, which kind of tells you all you need to know about my sports. But I'm going to let Corey Clark, who comes on at 3 p.m. Eastern time, handle this. Sports Talk with Corey Clark. If you're looking for a great afternoon drive time show that gives you solid sports talk and great analysis and Corey's picks for the coming games, tune into that, crusadechannel.com as well at 3 p.m. The number 9 thing that the AP thinks you should know is that Friday actor John Witherspoon, who memorably played Ice Cube's father in the trilogy, died at the age of 77. You know, I was reading this and I was like, you know, I don't really remember too much of what this guy was in, except for Friday. And I only saw the first one of those Friday movies whenever it came out 20 or 22 years ago, whatever it was. Not really the best movies, not moral movies. I definitely wouldn't suggest you letting your children watch those. But they're not really morally encouraging. But he played Pops, Ice Cube's father, in that comedy. And which had two sequels. It also had not Chris Rock. It was Chris Tucker was in those as well. So anyway, he passed away, and the AP thinks that you needed to know that. We mourn for the family, and we pray that he was in the right position when he passed away as well. Now, this is an interesting one. Number 8 of the top 10 things that the AP thinks you should know. Warren's fundraiser pledge includes a big caveat. I love whenever these stories come out because it begins to help us see and expose the hypocrisy which is in Democrat Party or Liberal Party, even Republicans as well. And that's this. So Washington AP says dozens of donors enjoyed a white tablecloth dinner, an open bar, and sweeping views of the U.S. Capitol this month when Elizabeth Warren strode on stage to headline a Democratic National Committee fundraiser. Remember that. It was a DNC fundraiser. The setting was similarly swanky in August when Warren addressed party contributors at the ornate Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. And it's likely to be much the same in December when Warren is slated to headline another party fundraiser in Boston. Now, what's interesting is the Massachusetts senator has become a leading Democratic presidential candidate in part because she has pledged to forgo events with high-dollar donors. which has resonated with the progressives who believe wealthy donors have outsized political influence. So Elizabeth Warren is saying, I'm not going to have these, much like Bernie Sanders has, she's not going to have these fundraisers for herself, where she gets oodles and oodles of money from all of these billionaires and all of these millionaires that, happen to be leaning left. No, she's not going to do that for herself, but she will do it for her party because she's got her eye on the nomination. See, this is that loophole that they find where they try to present this really moral. I'm so moral. Oh, I'm so moral and so awesome. I won't take money from millionaires, but I'll raise it for the Democratic National Committee. This is, it just shows you they don't care about, the commies hate millionaires and they hate billionaires until they need the millionaire and billionaire's money for their elections and to gain power. So it's hypocrisy. And it's the way that they use the funds, and it's the way that they go about the sneaky, conniving way that they go about getting this money by setting up these virtue signals, by saying, I'm not going to take money for them, but I'll take it here. Bernie Sanders is doing the exact same thing. And Warren even defends herself. She's not going to stop the way that she's getting this money, et cetera. But it really comes down to the fact that Warren is doing the exact same thing, only just under a different wrapper. Liberals love money. Communists love money. They just love other people's money, and they don't want you to have any of that money. Because that's all communism is. That's all socialism is. I was asked one time what the difference between communism and socialism is. And I think it's really comes down to the difference of a couple of million dead people. Because socialism and communism have one thing in common, and that the leaders, the people at the top, the ones at the top of that pyramid, they're the ones who know good and well how to run your life. They're the ones who want to get all of your money because they know how much soda you should be drinking. They know who should be receiving health care. They know who should be euthanized, and they know which babies should be killed. They know which political parties that need to be increased in power. They know exactly what your children need to be educated with in schools. They are the ones. They're the smart ones. Not you, little Miss American and Mr. American. They don't care. Because you're too stupid. Just remember that. Whenever you hear Elizabeth Warren talking, whenever you hear Buttigieg talk, whenever you hear Beto O'Rourke talk, whenever you hear these folks talk about stuff, just remember, underlying all of that is a desire to consume, a desire to have as much power as possible, and a desire to tell you that you're just too stupid to run your life. That's all they have to do. That's all they want. And people will gladly give all of this over. They'll gladly give away their rights. They'll gladly give away their freedom, like lambs going to the slaughter. They'll just right on into the slaughterhouse, like a cow staring at a new gate. For some reason, I'm going with a lot of barnyard analogies right now because I'm from Kentucky. That's what you do. But still, there is this idea that for some reason, these folks on the top are the moral superiority, and they're going to be able to give us everything that we need. Now, also, it's not just the people on top. Well, don't get me wrong. The people on top need the mindless sheep at the bottom. So don't be a mindless sheep. Because when you watch a Democratic national debate, I'm not going to put myself through that. Somebody else can do that and give the analysis on it. But when you watch it, or when you listen to any of the sound bites, or you watch any of the clips, or any of the debates, or anything that comes out of those things, the number one thing is how much more free stuff I'm going to give you than the other guy or the other gal. That's what it comes down to. But here in Kentucky, now this is really interesting. Crusader Stadium. Trivia question. Go to crusadechannel.com/chat. All you need is an email. You sign in. It's free. There are three nations in the United States that will be having gubernatorial elections next Tuesday. Three. I'm going to give you one of them, and that's Kentucky. There are two more. If you put them in the chat room, I'll be very impressed. But don't Google it. Don't internet search it. Don't DuckDuckGo it. Don't go to Brave Browser. Just if you know it, pop it in there. If you don't know it, that's fine. But there are three nations here in the United States. One of those is Kentucky. And Kentucky is with Matt Bevin and Andy Beshear. Matt Bevin has done a lot in increasing millions of dollars in additional funds for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Not only that, but since 2015, or actually since 2016, when historically, so Kentucky is a Commonwealth, but Kentucky is a deep blue state when it comes to local elections, because there are a lot of conservative Southern old time Democrats, which are down in the coal mines where my family comes from, and even over in Western Kentucky, and really there's a solid blue streak that comes through it. But always when it comes to national elections, they're flipping red all the time. It's such a weird thing. But since Matt Bevin has come in here, we've had a lot of pro-life legislation passed, more than what's been done. We have flipped from a democratically controlled chamber to a Republican controlled chamber. Millions of dollars and billions of additional tax revenue has come here because of Matt Bevin. Andy Beshear wants to reverse all of that. And the reason that he wants to reverse all of that is because he wants to focus on stronger education, stronger health care. So those two factors here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, the two things that he wants to focus on more by reversing Matt Bevin's is he wants to take more money from the private sector and put it into the public sector. And he wants to take the education, and he wants to increase teacher pay. He wants to fund the pensions that are draining us, and he wants to increase the power of public schools. So again, all he wants to do is transfer from private to public. And that's exactly what these liberals want. But when you watch that, when you see that, you have to be smart enough to say, wait just a second. If you're putting millions of dollars into education, you're putting millions of dollars into pensions, and you're putting millions of dollars into these unfunded liabilities of state workers, where are you getting that money? Where is that coming from? Well, it's coming from the taxpayers in the Commonwealth. It's coming from the taxpayers of all of the states in the union. It's coming from everybody else, and all of that money is being funneled down. And that is really the nastiness and the illogical of application of communism and socialism. But people don't understand that. People don't understand that you have got to listen to what they're saying so that you don't give in to and you don't become a sheep. All right, so far I have on these top 10, I've made it to number 8. So let's go again here now. Number 7 of the 10 things AP thinks you should know today. School kids get mixed report card. I found this pretty interesting, as a matter of fact. America's 8th graders are falling behind in math and reading, while 4th graders are doing slightly better in reading, according to the latest results of the nation's report card. But there are some expectations to the findings, which also showed declines among 4th graders in math. Mississippi and the District of Columbia showed gains, along with other big city school districts nationwide. A little more than a third of 8th graders are proficient in reading and math. About a third of 4th graders are proficient in reading, while more than 40% of 4th graders are proficient in math. So Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, says that this country is in a student achievement crisis, and that over the past decade it has continued to worsen, especially for our most vulnerable students. Nationwide, the nationwide test is given to a random sampling of students in the 4th and 8th grades every 2 years. Students made big gains in math in the 1990s and 2000s, but have shown little improvement since then. Reading scores have risen a little since the test began in 92. The decline of both reading and math performance among 8th grade students preparing to enter high school was especially concerning, says authorities. Now, Peggy Carr, the Associate Commissioner of the National Center for Education Statistics, told reporters that 8th grade is a transitional point in preparing students for success in high school. So it is crucial that researchers further explore the declines we are seeing here, especially the larger, more widespread declines across states we are seeing in reading. Both low and high achieving 8th graders slipped in reading. Now, here's what they say that we need to do. Now, she does admit, because with statistics, you have what's called inferential statistics, where you gather all your data, put it together in graphs, you put it together in plot graphs, and you get all the information organized. And then when you look at it, you infer what those could be specifically saying. Okay. Now it's not a science. It's more of a it's an art, because you're trying to determine, well, how many eighth graders have done better in math, and what are the places in the country where they've done better? Is it in higher performing city schools? Are they doing worse in lower performing poor schools and rural areas? What is the difference here? Are their parents higher income? Are their school districts better? What is the difference in all of these? And it's inferential statistics. So she does say that the data is just presented. The assessment is designed to tell you what is happening, not why it's happening. All right. But DeVos said that a widening achievement gap between the highest and lowest performing students and used the results to push for expanded school choice, right? Which makes sense. But Daniel Wallingham, a professor of psychology at the University of Virginia, said it's hard to find a coherent story. And then later on in this particular news piece, they said that this really started happening during the financial crisis, when money started being depleted from schools. So there it is yet again. Schools need more money. They're trying to get more money to improve reading and math skills. Now, why are they trying to get more money? Because that's what liberals do. Liberals just throw money at everything, hoping it's going to work. The answer is not more money. It's not more incentives to school teachers. It's not more, it's not better pensions. It's not better rewards for retirement. The answer to school kids increasing their math and increasing their reading skills, brace yourself, homeschool. That's what it's all about. Homeschool. Pull your kids out. And we'll give you another story here later, which we're going to get Barrett's take on as well, coming out of Austin, about the reason, not just an additional reason why you should pull your kids out of public school, but school kids, children need their parents teaching them directly. That's straight up what it's about. And you're like, oh, that's you fundamentalist. That's absolutely insane. I can't do that. I've got a car payment. I've got this and that. Listen, there's only one thing you need to worry about, and that's upgrading to a Founders Pass on the CrusadeChannel.com. You can get rid of Netflix. You can get rid of Amazon. You can get rid of Hulu. You can get rid of your car payment. All of that stuff. That's the only thing you need to worry about. So go to CrusadeChannel.com, upgrade to the Founders Pass. But if you want to make sure that all of your money is given to the right place, if you want to make sure that your money is attached directly to the students and not just to a teacher, now don't get me wrong, I have teachers listening to this show right now. I have teachers in my family. I have a great amount of respect for them. They're intelligent people. I don't doubt their desire to help kids. But they are exceptions to the rule. And I say that so I don't get stoned when I leave the studio today. But if you want to make sure that your kids get the best attention, that every dime that you spend goes directly to their education, do homeschool. Straight up. My wife and I started doing homeschool years ago. And my daughters have had issues with specific subjects. And my wife has been able to stop and educate them and give them personal attention every single time. And it's improved their testing scores. What? Yes. It improved their math, it improved their science, it improved their English, it improved their reading. Boom. That's how you do it. 844-527-8723 if you disagree. Number six thing on the 10 things JP needs you to know is that clergy remember nursing wounded at Berlin Wall. It's a pretty interesting story. Sister Bridget, I believe it's Quisser, I'm sorry, walked slowly along the decaying remains of the Berlin Wall, and she recounts helping people that were trying to flee the Soviet-controlled East Berlin during the 30 years that the wall divided part of the city from the free Western side. And they were trying to go underground, they tried to go across water. I mean, there were people that were dying, and she was one of those sisters that succeeded in helping save people. Not just help them get away from tyranny, but also saving their lives. This is a really great story. It actually goes more in depth than what we can hit right now, but very encouraging, because these folks were fleeing tyranny. They were actually legitimately trying to get out from under the thumb of the big government tyrannical movement that was on them at that point. But you have to be careful. we have to be very careful in our country that we don't turn into something like that, or where we have people having to flee the tyranny that would come if we have communists and socialists and liberals that are running our country. But we have to ask ourselves, are we heading in this direction? But men and women, freedom requires vigilance. We always have to ensure that we're standing up for the principles of justice that are given and laid out by God and his word. Number five, Mideast protest challenge. Mideast protests pose challenge to Iran. Now, this is interesting. This is right after the Berlin Wall one, because Iran has to be very careful of the protests that are rising up, these grassroots movements, because I saw a thing the other day on Twitter that showed Iran pre 1979, I think, with the Iranian revolution, the Islamic revolution. People were free, people were happy, people were on the beach, they were enjoying the sun, the weather, their family, they were enjoying all these things. They were a free country. But then the Islamic revolution came in and destroyed all that. So I think that they should be worried in Iran. And the reason they should be worried in Iran is because you cannot keep people down. You cannot keep people oppressed. People will rise up. Good or bad, if they have violent revolutions, if they have peaceful revolutions, they will rise up. Number three thing that the AP thinks you should know, Californians struggle with the winds and fires after blackouts. This, you got to keep praying for these folks out there. If they're in the path of these fires, just keep praying that a holy gust of wind goes out there and stops these fires, that we get some massive rainfall. Something happens. Keep praying for these folks, because they're going through, I think it's the fourth day of intentional blackouts for this. So please be in prayer for the Californians struggling with the winds and the fires and the blackouts out there. The number two thing that the AP thinks you should know is that what has American officials concerned about the election? Now, listen to this opening paragraph. I love this opening paragraph, and see if you can pick it out. Washington, AP. Russia interfered in the 2016 election and may try to sway next year's vote as well. So now this is just an established fact? Russia interfered in the 2016 election. They must be going to Tay-Tay School of Logic, because it's obvious that Russia, like, totally interfered with the election. Like, totally. And it's, like, totally going to happen again because, like, Trump is mean and stuff. I don't even understand how you can take an article seriously after it starts out with an illogical premise such as that. Russia interfered in the election, but it's not the only nation with an eye on U.S. politics. So what they're doing now is they're setting up for the next 4 years of complaints and whining and complaining from liberals as to why they won. Hillary Clinton is still at it. She's still talking about every single reason why she lost. Of course, last week she said, I can beat Trump again. That's actually how she sounds. I can beat Trump again. She's delusional, and these situations show the exact way that the mainstream media is going. We know it's an established fact. They cheated. That's why Hillary Clinton didn't win. But I thought it was because Donald Trump was vulgar and women didn't like it. Or I thought it was because of her. Oh, my gosh. So many reasons. I can't even keep up with all the reasons. But this is the narrative they're pushing, because they can't stand the fact that the American public is tired of dealing with the mamby-pamby garbage of these back-and-forth politics, and they want somebody to stand up for the strength of the United States of America. And again, you're going to accuse me of being an always Trumper, but I'm not. All I am is saying that when he does good, he does good. When he's bad, he's bad. The number one story is the impeachment witness says keywords omitted from transcript, which this is all the same old narrative. Of course, they're going to continue to say that what he did in that phone call was bad, but the obvious truth says it's not. Listen, we're up against a break right now, but stay with us for the second hour of the Barrett Brief. I am Aaron Barker. This is the Crusade Channel, always online, always on air. The last live radio station standing. See you on the other side. back to the Married Brief right here on the Crusade Channel. CrusadeChannel.com is the place for you to listen. CrusadeChannel.com/chat is the chat room. You can listen. You can go there as well and put in all your comments, information, and such. We're going into the third hour of the program. Thank you all so very much for staying with us. The chat room is hopping. All kinds of great conversation. Things happening there that you can be a part of. This hour, we're going to be hitting some more information on masculine men and what is happening to masculinity. But I also, here again, I just want to hit this book one more time. This is A Humility of Heart, which is available at mikechurch.com/shop. Listen to this here as you reflect on what true humility is. It has often happened that those who are more perfect than others have shamefully fallen, and this after a long period of good and virtuous works, showing the marvelous things that a man can do when able, if abandoned to himself and left to the weaknesses of his own free will. God has shown his creative omnipotence by forming me out of nothing and making me a human being. Were God to withdraw his omnipotent preserving hand from me, I should at once show that I am capable of when left to myself by returning immediately into my nothingness. And in the order of grace, the nothingness into which I relapse when left to myself is sin. How often I am brought to nothing and I knew not. And what can I find to be proud of in that nothingness? Give me grace, O God, to know myself only as much as is necessary to keep me humble. For if I fully realize the insignificance of my own being and the extent of my malice, which is capable of offending thee in divers inconceivable ways, I fear I should be so filled with horror at myself that I should give way to despair. We have within ourselves, in our own experience and feelings, and knowledge of how greatly our frail and fallen nature is inclined to evil. Today, we go and confess certain of our faults, making the resolution not to fall into them again. And tomorrow, notwithstanding, we commit them once more. What is true humility? Is true humility this false sense of humility that you get? This, I'm a piece of crap. I suck at life. I'm stupid. Is it this false humility of, well, I'm just not as good as that other guy is. I'll just never be as good as they are. Or is true humility a recognition that without the grace of God, there is absolutely nothing that you can do to make yourself less of a horrid person than what you are? Without the commanding presence of the Holy Spirit, without his grace constantly and consistently keeping us, there would be nothing that we could do to stay in God's good graces. Because without this recognition, this acknowledgement of our sinfulness before God, then we will never get farther. That is the thing that Romans 1 is so prevalent about. And you'll be honest with you, there are so many things that are happening in the world today, and I have gone back to Romans chapter 1 multiple times when people ask questions. Well, why is this happening? Why is that happening? Why do we have all this perversion in schools that is being taught? Why do we have all this sex education? Why do we have drag queens in the libraries reading stories to our kids? Why do we have 45 million pedophilia images on the radio? Or I'm sorry, online, on the internet. Why is all of that stuff so prevalent? Why is all of it stuff? Romans chapter 1 explains that to us. Romans chapter 1 gives it very specifically. God's wrath. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Now get that. You suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Purposely do that. You don't just accidentally do it. You purposely suppress the truth of God in unrighteousness, saying, I am not going to bow down. I'm not going to do the things commanded to me by God. I am purposely, willingly going to suppress that, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. So when you look outside, people say, well, I don't believe in God. I'm an atheist. Well, God doesn't believe in atheists, so I don't know where that leaves you. But if you look outside, how do you know that the building across the street, how do you know that there was a builder? because the building is proof of the builder. When you look at the painting and you see something painted, how do you know that there was a painter? Because the painting is proof of the painter. So when you look at trees and the leaves, and when you look at the grass and the dirt, when you look at the clouds, when you look at the composite pictures from NASA and you see the Earth, when you look through a telescope and you see the planets, you see all the stars, how do you know that there was a creator? Because the creation is proof of the creator. And that's exactly what this passage is pointing out here. The things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because the invisible attributes of God are clearly seen. His creative power, his creative strength is all displayed before us. So there's absolutely zero excuse. Because although they knew God, verse 21, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God to an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness and the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator, who was blessed forever. Amen. Now, what does that have to do with humility? Because in order for you to realize the sinfulness of your being, in order for you to get to the place as Father Bergamo has gotten, to where he asks for God to give just enough grace to know himself only as much as necessary to keep him humble, when you get to that point and you realize that there's no way out of the condition in which I've been born, there's no way out of this, I am not going to be able to do it by myself, and the only place you have to look is to Christ. The only place you have to look is directly into the eyes of our Savior, who has given himself for us. So, humility, as we go through our life, we realize we have to be teachable. We have to submit to the power of God. But true humility comes, and the most basic form is realizing that we are separated from God, and the only way to bring us back to God is through Jesus Christ. Paul says in Acts, when he's preaching on Mars Hill, and he's talking to him as he's standing on top of the altar of the unknown God, he tells them, he says, the times of ignorance God has winked at, but now he commands all men everywhere to repent. So in the past, up until that point, okay, God has winked at. He has not exercised the judgment that he is completely morally justified in doing. There is nothing stopping God from raining down his wrath and destroying the wicked in one fell swoop, like a Thanos snap, bam, done, pow, gone. Nothing is stopping him except for his grace, except for his goodness, except for his kindness. And it is the kindness and the goodness of God that leads you to repentance. That, ladies and gentlemen, was what true humility is. And you can get this book, Humility of Heart. It's not a book I think you can sit down and read straight through. I think this is one of those books you have to digest chunks of. But you can go to mikechurch.com/shop, pick up Humility of Heart, pick up all their other great products there. Mike Church has done, worked very hard and produced nothing but excellent products. And then, of course, get you the Capuchin Dark Roast. And if you love me, buy some of Mike's cigars and send them to me. Fine with that. 844-527-8723, crusadechannel.com, always online, always on air, the last live radio station standing. See, this is what you get if you become a founding father. If you go and get a membership to the Crusade Channel, we don't just stop. I can't say we yet. The Crusade Channel doesn't stop if somebody has to go. Like, look, we're praying for you, but we're gonna make sure that people are getting live radio. That's what we're doing. Right now, live radio all the time. So go to crusadechannel.com/go and get 30 days for free. All right. Now, as I promised, we're going to be discussing the attack on masculinity. This has come up a lot over the past several years. Actually, this has been so glaring in the past several years. We knew that there was an attack. We knew that there was a problem. We knew that there were issues, obviously, that we had to, with which we had to deal when it came to masculinity and it began when it came to dealing with a societal attack on men. Now, we're not, when I talk about masculinity, I'm not talking about going out into the woods and chopping down a tree with your teeth or lighting a fire with two stones. Super cool. Like if you can cut down a tree with your teeth, I'd watch. I know how to make fire multiple methods. I'm fine with that. Barrett has great articles on the Acting All Crusadery blog, crusadechannel.com, which talks about preparedness. No problem with that stuff. If the Schumer hits the fan and you've got to be prepped and ready, skills like axe craft, firecraft, bushcraft, all of those extremely important. Where are you going to get water? Where are you going to get shelter? Where are you going to get fire? Where are you going to get food? All of those things. I'm down with that. I'm like a wannabe prepper when it comes to that stuff. So I'm not saying that those skills are not are what encompasses masculinity. Because we can't reduce what being a man is to outdoor skills. Because those skills, even though they're very popular, even though they've enjoyed a comeback in the most recent years, those are from a bygone era. If we're looking at it realistically, they're from a bygone era, an agrarian society which required those. The way that folks lived in the 1800s required, it necessitated your ability to cut down trees to build your own house. It required you to know how to hunt. It required you to know how to get and go to get clear water. Today, we have modern amenities. It's not a requirement. Therefore, to assume that that is necessary for manhood is to say that we have to go back to that particular society and make ourselves an agrarian setup like that. That's not necessary. Masculinity, the biblical masculinity, is always constant. See, those guys lived in a culture where God had put them, and they had to exercise the same biblical masculinity that we as men have to exercise today. Right? So, taking care of your family, being strong in the Lord, reading your scriptures, praying, seeking God, leading your family to Christ. All of those folks back in those times had to do the same exact thing. So even though those skills are fun, even though those skills will maybe be required if we have a complete infrastructural breakdown in society here, even though they may be necessary, they are not required. But this attack on manhood doesn't go back to the ability for us to be able to build a fire, right? It doesn't go back to our ability to be able to gather water or find a place, something like that. This goes even farther back to the Garden of Eden, all the way back to creation. We're going to go all the way 6,000 years ago. We're going to go all the way back to the start of everything. Because in the Garden of Eden, that's where the actual attack on biblical manhood took place. Because Eve was approached by the serpent, and the serpent was tempting Eve, and Eve succumbed to the temptation. Now, Adam was there. He was seeing all of this stuff happen. Now, Adam could have stepped in and said, hey, pop, and sucker punched the snake and been like, not in my house, dog. Pop, you know, just boom, right? Just right in the, you know, kisser, pow, boom, right to the moon. He could have done that, but he didn't. And when Eve said, hey, here you go, try this out, whatever that fruit was, some people think it was a banana because banana's been around for, it's interesting. But anyway, that's something you can look up at another time, completely different topic. But had Adam said, no, I'm not doing that, we wouldn't have been in the situation that we're in right now. We wouldn't have been in the problem that we have. If Adam would not have eaten of that, we'd have gone on. Now, something would have happened. The fall would have eventually happened. But Adam succumbed to his wife's temptation. Now, people are like, well, that's not very fair. Adam partook of the fruit, and then everybody in humanity fell after that. That means that every person that was born up into Christ was born infected with original sin. People are like, well, that's not very fair. That's not fair at all. I didn't do it. Adam's the one that did it. But Adam doing that paved the way for Christ to be the second Adam to step in for us and be our representative there. See, Adam was the federal representative of all mankind at that time. He was the only man that was created, perfect and created. He fell, which caused every man after him to fall. The perfect representative that God himself picked for that job. And you're like, well, I would have done that. Yeah, yeah, you would. It may not have been that day. It would have been a day. You'd have done it. You'd have fell. Nobody would have been able to withstand that. You'd have fallen. But because Adam fell, and because he was our federal representative, and because he stood in our place there and was for all of mankind, Christ is also able to stand in our place and take upon us or take upon himself the punishment that he could not, that we could not take on our own, so that he could fulfill the prophecy, so he could be the one upon whom God poured out his wrath and judgment, so that we would not have to be the ones that took that pain and punishment of ourselves. But when you look at that, the Satan was jealous of mankind because it was a crowning achievement of God. He created mankind, and Satan fell. He was upset. He was angry. He hates God, still hates him to this day. So he was like, I'm going to go after those folks. I'm going to make sure they fall because I'm not going to let God achieve. I'm not going to let God succeed. Then Adam and Eve, after God gave them grace and did not kill them, because he said, the day you eat of the tree, you shall surely die. He didn't kill them automatically. He made a sacrifice for them and placed a covering over them of animal skins. But anyway, so Satan's attack against man was the attack to stop him. Genesis 3:15, the Proto-Evangelium, where God said, there will come, your seed will bruise his head, and your seed will crush his head, and he will bruise your heel. That was the Proto-Evangelium. So Satan knew that there was going to be coming a Messiah through the lineage of Adam and through the lineage of the man and the woman that would be the one to completely destroy him and put him under subjection for eternity. So what did Satan go about doing? Satan went about trying to destroy the bloodline of man any way he could possible. And he did it when the daughters of God, when the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they went in unto them and they had Nephilim. And God said, you've polluted the bloodline. I'm going to save Noah and his family who's righteous. And then he destroyed the entire world by flood. He destroyed the entire world by flood. Satan didn't give up then. Actually, the book of Enoch, Mike mentioned this a few weeks ago, Mike Church, on the Crusade Channel, crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing, by the way. Satan was still trying to pollute the bloodline. And then in Genesis chapter 11, he was keeping the whole earth together to try to rule them under one new world order, one subjective force. God said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, but they stayed in one place. So God came and dispelled him and pushed him out to all other places of the earth. But then Satan still wouldn't stop because he knew that the bloodline was going to come from the Jews. He knew the Messiah was coming from them. So after Genesis 11 and then through generations in Egypt, when the Pharaoh had subjugated the children of Israel, Satan was working through him to ensure that the children of Israel would not burgeon and grow to the power to overtake Pharaoh. But since Satan knew that Christ was coming, the Messiah was coming from that lineage, he told Pharaoh to have those babies killed, all the males killed. Now, there were some who wouldn't do it, which is great. And that's how Moses was saved. He was preserved and he was raised in the house of Pharaoh, but knew his lineage and then became the deliverer of the children of Israel. So see, folks, when we fast forward all the way to the New Testament, Satan tried to tempt Christ in the garden. I'm sorry, in the desert. He tried to tempt him to bow down and worship him. He would give him everything. He tried to tempt him with food. He said, you can make this food. He said, jump off this cliff or jump off this peak of this building. You can save yourself. He tried to tempt Jesus, and Jesus said, back off, man. Quoted scripture to him. And Satan knew that he had to try to stop Christ. So he conspired with the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the religious elite of that day. and had Christ murdered. But he didn't realize that by doing that, it was the exact thing that God had planned from eternity past to ensure that Jesus would be the Messiah, the one who was the second Adam who would stand up. Now, the reason I bring all this up is because when we look at drag queens in the libraries, when we look at Drag Queen Story Hour, when we look at the education that they're trying to introduce into schools, the sex education with which they're becoming successful at, when we see all of the different stories about abortion, which are becoming so prevalent that we have comfort rooms to protect them, keep this one thing in mind. This is not about liberal or Republican. This is not about left or right. This is straight about right and wrong. This is exactly only about Satan attacking the seed of Adam and trying to destroy as much as he possibly can. So don't think of this as an attack on outdoor skills for man. Think about this as a spiritual attack. If your eyes were to be open to the spiritual things happening in the world right now, you would freak out. But just remember, this is a spiritual attack. And this is something that we have to be very careful of, because the only way to fight against that, obviously with the power of Christ, is to listen to the Word of God, to stand up and be the men that God has called us to be. That is how we combat, and that is how we fight it. 844-527-8723, crusadechannel.com/chat. is where you can log in. We've got a really good conversation going on. Somebody in there says true femininity is also lost in today's society. Femininity is not about a roar of the woman. Femininity is not about taking over a male's role. True femininity is disrespected by these things. True femininity is loving and respecting the role in motherhood, rearing and raising our children, taking joy in managing the home, not leadership, but management. We need to pray for women to desire these things. Excellent statement. That's an awesome statement, because all of this, Ali 78 is right. The attack on femininity, they're trying to subvert by bringing in female priests, by bringing in female preachers, by bringing in female pastors and female deacons, all of those things. Not one of those is biblical. That's where the attack's coming on. As promised, next segment, we're going to be talking about marriage and my marriage advice. This is the Barrett Brief right here on the Crusade Channel. Keep it locked in on the last live radio station standing. Right here on crusadechannel.com. I am your fill-in host, Aaron Barker. Appreciate very much Barrett's help today as well, and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you going into this last segment of the show today. Again, the phone number, if you'd like to call, 844-527-8723, open lines. Anything you want to talk about, anything you want to discuss, we are happy to do that here. Also, the chat room is live and kicking into the wee hours of the program. Very excited about that. We've got quite a few speakers in there and a lively conversation happening. Very grateful for that. I love checking. I'm trying to check it as best as I can during the show, but sometimes it becomes difficult. But I am still scrolling through there. Very happy. Big thank you to Brian Jackson, who's also in the chat room. He is the producer up here on this end and has been doing a great job helping me out up here. Corey Clark doing an awesome job down there, too. But having somebody up here on this end kind of running that tech stuff for me is really a big help. It kind of helps out making sure that you're focused rather than having to worry about potential tech issues. So grateful to everybody and, of course, all you all for your endurance into this last segment, and to Mike Church, Mitter-Chur, for asking me to be on here. The significant digits today, I'm going to hit those in honor of Barrett. Of course, we did the top 10 things the AP wants you to know. So I want to go ahead and go through the significant digits here as well, because this is a really good. We talked about some pretty heavy stuff today on the show. I didn't mean to get all that out on you today in the first one. I hope you have me back. I hope that that's not going to be like, oh my gosh, this dude's too heavy. He's crazy. Don't want him back on. or this it's gonna have to we're gonna have to not have him back on. Just chill. Go get a King Dude's El Rey Dude Corona cigar, the Bellicoso size. You could buy three of those right now at a regular price, and you get one of those for just $5. So go buy one of those, enjoy that with a nice glass of bourbon, and just think about the heavy topics we discussed today, right? MikeChurch.com/shop. Get some great cigars and enjoy those, and just digest. Just think about that. But the significant digits and how they impact you. I was trying to get these earlier today, and Barrett was telling me that that Karen is just, you know, very, very kind of relaxed days ago when it comes to getting those things out there. But she got it out there and enough for me to prep. So some of these things, they might be brand new to me too. So if they are, just bear with me on it. Greatly appreciate it. So $3 billion in lost earnings is the first significant digits. American car maker General Motors Company says a 40-day strike at dozens of domestic factories will cost the company close to $3 billion with a B. B as in Barrett, as in Barker, as in brief, billion dollars in lost earnings. The Detroit auto manufacturer easily surpassed analyst forecasts for its third quarter results. But the road ahead will be bumpy, with executives saying that they expect the U.S. market to contract next year and further volatility in China and South America. The strike resulted in a new deal between GM and the United Auto Workers Union that increased wages and bonuses, but also the closure of three U.S. manufacturing plants. Go to Bulldog Kia and get a car. Stop messing around with General Motors and their cowtailing and bowing down to the unions. Why do we need unions anymore? We're not into coal mines. People aren't dying because of collapses. I mean, seriously, I feel like the O'Herlihy boy. Yeah. Why? Why are we worried about auto unions? These things do exactly what they do here. They hold companies a hostage. They cost company, the General Motors, $3 billion because of a 40-day strike. What conditions are so bad that you need to go on strike and cost the company $3 billion? Can you just tell me, like, what is so bad about it? Did your break time come 3 minutes too late? You know, like, dude, did the soda machine run out of Diet Dew? I mean, like, are they real substantial matters? Like, did the vending machine run out of Snicker bars? Because if that stuff happens, I can totally understand. But, you know, we're talking about what is so bad that right now we have to hold hostages these companies by these unions. And this $3 billion loss, and if you decide to go buy a Chevy, which is perfectly fine, or GM or whatever, if you go to buy one of these, that $3 billion that cost them, plus the increased wages that the UAW workers are getting paid and all of the bonuses that they're getting for putting together a car, that's all going to come out of your pocket. So you're going to be paying the Democratic Party more and more money for you to be able to buy a car from them because it costs you that much more. All right. So 14 highest peaks in 189 days. It's a second significant digit from 538.com. Nirmal Purja had some ambition and was clearly ready to compete. He smashed the record for climbing the world's 14 highest peaks in 189 days, or a little over 6 months. The Nepalese former British Army soldier's speedy itinerary included climbing Everest. Whoa, that's a feat in of itself. I'm assuming that's Lhotse and Makalu back to back in only 48 hours in summiting Shishapagma, his last climb at 8:58 a.m. local time on Tuesday. South Korean climber Kim Chang Ho held the previous record for 7 years, 11 months, and 14 days. So it took this last guy 7 years, 11 months, and 14 days to do what this guy did in 189 days? Wow. If I can get from my couch to the bathroom and back in 189 days, I consider myself blessed on that. But this includes Everest. How many people have died on Everest? And this dude climbs it. He mounts that and then goes to the other ones. That's pretty amazing. That's from The Guardian. If you want to read more on that, I may have to put that in my pocket for reading on that later, because that is very impressive. 14 highest mountains, all in the Himalayas in 189 days. So that's definitely impressive. Good on you, man. Good on you. If we're going to now that's manly. All right. That is manly. We'll go ahead and talk. We'll talk, toss that in there real quick. All right. 23 Republican seats. This is the second significant digit from 538. 23 Republican seats. One of the reasons why Republican senators haven't broken with the President Trump is because there are 23 seats held by members of the GOP that are up for re-election next year. And five of those races have been rated by election forecasters as the most competitive Senate races in 2020. So one of the reasons is because they know Trump wins elections. And they got to have those seats. Otherwise, if you speak against Trump, it's the Trump curse. Even though you have the Trump cult, those people that are diehard in the wool, all about Trump, those like Trump zombies rather than Trump supporters. But you got to have that support. If you don't, you're not going to get your seat back. And that's a pretty significant amount there right there, though. We need to maintain those numbers. We've had a pretty good consistency with Trump regarding pro-life issues. We need to maintain that. So I'm glad. Maybe that'll bring a little bit more party unity rather than these backbiting Mitt Romneys that we have. Zero refugees in October. CNN reports that the United States is on track to admit zero refugees for the month of October after canceling approximately 500 flights. A State Department spokesperson confirmed a pause of admissions will now extend until November 5. The third delay this month, crying tears of sorrow. The United Nations Refugee Agency estimated there were more than 20 million refugees last year, with more than 12,000 Syrian refugees fleeing in recent months as humanitarian crisis worsens. I thought we took in all kinds of refugees from Mexico and from South America. I thought that's what the whole caravan was about. They're constantly coming in. We took in refugees, but they're just considered another type of refugee, like they're called illegals. Three times as many fatal car accidents involving kids. This is bad. You might still be scrambling to think of a Halloween costume, but one of the scariest things about the last day of October is the annual spike in fatal car accidents involving kids. The Washington Post analyzed federal highway safety data and found children are three times more likely to be struck and killed while trick-or-treating at that night than any other day of the year. Well, if you're trick-or-treating any other day of the year, probably won't be as much traffic out. The numbers are relatively low compared to the millions of costumed kids who go out, but data shows roads are becoming more dangerous over time after a record number of pedestrians and cyclists were killed by cars last year. Parents, keep an eye on your kids. Drivers, keep an eye out for kids. You know, just some of those things happen in a split second. You're following the laws. You're doing everything appropriate. You're following the speed suggestions. But just keep your eyes peeled, man. Keep watching out for them. And just be careful. This is a tragic setup. I mean, to have that one night that kids look for, this is like the night that kids are the most stoked about outside of Christmas. Because Christmas, you get a bunch of free presents. On Halloween, you get a bunch of free candy. It's the most socialistic holiday ever created. Because you dress up in a poor costume, even if it's bad, you're still going to get a present. You're still going to get a prize for it. You knock on the doors of complete strangers and you beg for something, expecting them to give it to you. Otherwise, if they don't, you're going to coerce them by threatening some kind of bodily or property harm. I mean, it's just a big socialistic holiday anyway, but enjoy yourself. Get all the free candy you want to get. Find the house that has the big candy bars and get them. But watch out for the kids. We don't want any kids dying. 74,000 square foot grocery store. Food is a really important part of everyone's life, but a few places inspire the level of fandom and loyalty on display at 7 a.m. on Sunday in Brooklyn when a new 74,000 square foot branch of the incredibly popular Wegmans grocery store chain opened in the Navy Yard. That's a run-on sentence. Hundreds of people lined up to shop at the family-owned business with some Wegamaniacs. I've never even heard of Wegmans. Traveling 6 hours for the opportunity to browse the brand new aisles. I mean, what kind of sad life do you lead if the most exciting part of your day is the opening of a bigger grocery store than what you've already got? I mean, I still don't see how women get so excited about going to IKEA. I would rather put my face through plate glass than to go to that establishment. But Like, if you're standing outside and you've actually built yourself as a hashtag Wegamaniac because you love those stores so much, there's something wrong. Like seriously, go outside and look at the flowers and the trees, you know, see if they have a life for sale on aisle 13. I just get something to not be excited about a grocery store. That's very sad. But that winds it down for those significant digits for Wednesdays. That was just weird. 74,000 foot grocery store. They're opening something like that up here local. I think it's an Amazon hub because it's right next to the airport. Amazon's putting a bunch of stuff in next to the airport. And those destroyers of God's property have taken down so many trees. Sorry. I don't know where that came from. 844-527-8723. That's 844-527-8723. Chat room is still up and going. We're losing people in the chat room, folks. We've got 13 minutes left. Don't bail on us now. Head on back to the chat room. You got to hang out there anyway because you got Corey Clark coming on at 3 o'clock, the best sports talk drive time radio out there. Then you got David Simpson, and then you've got Brother Andre Marie later. So why are you even logging out? Just stay in the chat room. You know, what are you going to do? Go to Wegmans? All right. So as promised, here are some things that I'm going to give you about marriage advice. All right. Everything I've learned about women in the past 20 years, I have two daughters. I have my wife and my dog is a female. I couldn't even get a dude for a dog. So I'm totally outnumbered at my place. There's no chance for me. But what I do with my wife as far as how I model things to my wife and how I treat my wife is going to splash over to my daughters because they're going to see how I act towards my wife. They're going to see how a man should treat his spouse. And that's who they're going to look for. As a matter of fact, the other day, my daughter told me that she had told our cousin that she wanted to marry a man like me. And I was like, oh my gosh, as if I didn't already have enough pressure. And I was like, well, why is that? And she goes, because you're weird. Oh, wait, hold on a second. I'm not sure that's the best reason, you know, to do that. Okay. Because I don't want some man bun dude coming home in flip flops. But still, okay, sorry, serious note here. So I have two articles here I want to get through that are very important, I think, in establishing a relationship with your wife. Now, if you have a complete angry, mean woman, it doesn't change the way that you're supposed to treat your wife. If you have the worst nag in the entire world, like, if just imagine, you know, you could be married to Roseanne Barr. If that's the kind of woman we're talking about, if we're talking about like Rosie O'Donnell type, even if you're married to one of those, you still have a responsibility to treat your wife with love and respect. Okay. So these are the six ways to make your wife feel ugly. Just stay with me. First thing that you can do to make your wife feel ugly, fail to compliment her efforts. Now, dudes, this is hard for us, okay? Scott in the chat room just said, what about Hillary? Man, that's a curveball. I'm going to need some time to think about that one. But yes, she's still a woman created in image of God. Number one here, failure to compliment her efforts. I know this is hard for us dudes. It's difficult for us to be able to talk to our women and tell them our feelings and our emotions, but you've got to compliment your wife because that's how they're structured. They want to know that you appreciate things about them. Now, I'm not talking about telling them how beautiful they are, telling them they look lovely in the dress that they're wearing. Whatever it is, it doesn't have to be that. It could be something like, thank you so much for cleaning that up today. Thank you so much for taking care of the kids while I did show prep. Thank you for fixing meals. Thank you so much for homeschooling our kids. Thank you for being a sounding board. Thank you for loving me and being patient with me. You have to notice these things. You might say them in your head. Yeah, well, she knows I love her. She's got to hear that you know that you compliment her. She got to hear those things. If you're not saying out loud how beautiful she is, she's likely interpreting your silence as disapproval. Number two, praise another, this is the way you make your wife feel ugly. Praise another woman with words you've never used for your wife. Gentlemen, what business do you have complimenting the way other women look, talking about how beautiful another woman is? What business do you have saying, oh my gosh, she looks so hot? That's not your spouse. Your eyes are reserved for your love. The Bible says that we are to enjoy our wives for eternity. You do that. You enjoy your wife. You enjoy her and you compliment her. But if you're going around and you're saying things about the way other women look and the way other women speak, and if you say, well, so-and-so has lost weight. Actually, no, I'm sorry. That's not a dude. So-and-so has lost weight. Whatever it is. If you say so-and-so looks good on TV, just don't. Because if you praise another woman with those same kind of words that you're reserving for your wife, what are you saying to her? She knows that there are other pretty women in the world. We know that there are other better looking guys in the world. But when you compliment another woman, she feels like you're comparing her to that woman. The number three way to make your wife feel ugly, and this is a big one, dudes. This is a big one. So if you're doing it, stop right now. Look at pornography. Now, we could go on about this, but drop the mic. If you're doing it, stop. First, you're not glorifying Christ by doing that. You're not honoring God by looking at that. You're dishonoring God. You're dishonoring your commitment, and you're making your wife feel worthless and ugly. This is a scourge in the church right now. This is a scourge for men. I'm not going to go into statistics about the sex trafficking. I'm not going to go into the statistics about the destruction it does to your psyche, your physiological effects. Look at the spiritual impact. You continue to do this kind of sin, you're just paving your way to hell. So stop doing it. You're supposed to be the knight in shining armor. You're supposed to be her prince. You're supposed to be the one that's the protector. Are you doing that when you're looking at another woman and another man together? I mean, also you're looking at other naked dudes. Stop. Number four way to make your wife feel ugly, not initiating a hug or a kiss, or only doing so when you want a little something, something. If you don't show affection to your wife, if you don't give her any physical affection, and I'm not talking about, you know, making out with her, it's like just a back rub. Helping her with rubbing her feet, rubbing her legs, giving her a hug, a little peck on the cheek, just showing a little bit of affection, a little bit of love to your wife and not expecting anything in return, right? If you're only doing it because you want to initiate something, then what good are you making your wife feel? You're just showing her that all you want her for is that. Is that all you want her for? Because if not, you need to be regular in initiating hugs or kisses or any type of affection towards your wife that shows her how much you appreciate her and how much you love her. Number five, and this goes along with the pornography one, and it goes along with the comments about other women. But number five, to make your wife feel ugly, do a double take when another woman walks by. Go ahead. Go ahead and do it. Just go ahead, guy. Don't really do it. I'm being really facetious right now. But your wife notice, and we're wired. Men and women both are wired. Men more heavily so to appreciate beautiful things. We see work of art. We appreciate it. We see a beautiful sunset. We appreciate it. We're built. We're wired for that. But when another woman walks by, be respectful to your wife and don't do a double take. Don't look. Don't acknowledge. Just keep your eyes forward. Make sure that you're not, because women notice this. They know you're doing it, and it hurts them when you do it. So stop. Your eyes are reserved for your wife and your wife alone. Your lust is deserved and reserved for your wife and your wife alone. No other woman, no other harlot that's going to walk by. Number six, and the last on the list, peek at your phone while your sweetheart is talking. This is offensive, first off, for any kind of communication, but especially with your wife. My wife and I, every Monday night, we do a date night, and we have coffee, and we have just a little bite to eat, and we end up spending the 2-3 hours just talking with one another. We have our phones, obviously, because we want to be sure to be reached in emergency situations, but we don't peek at our phones. Try it next time. See what your wife does when you're talking to her and she and you look at your phone. See what she thinks when you're more excited about what ESPN is popping up on your phone, or what Facebook is saying, or what's on Twitter, or what Donald Trump has said about China, that you are so that you're willing to forego complete attention to her to do that. It's a very important thing. Don't do it to anybody, but especially your wife. Give her your attention. Get that FaceTime, eye-to-eye, face-to-face talking. Have a conversation with her and make that connection. So those are the 6 ways to make your wife feel ugly. So my advice is, don't make your wife feel ugly. Compliment her. Love her. Praise her with the words that are due only for her as your wife. Stop. If you are looking at pornography, stop looking at pornography. Initiate affection with her. Don't look at other women, and don't peek at your phone when she's trying to talk to you. Very simple. Well, folks, we are nearing the end of the show. We've just got a few waning moments here, and I just want to stop and say thank you all for all of the support. Thank you for this. It's been an absolute blast. Appreciate Barrett helping me out during the show as well. Appreciate the invite by Mike and the kindness that all the Crusaders have shown me in the chat room and also on all the social media that were there. Please, if you're not following me already, @BreakDRadio is my Twitter, Facebook. Also go to facebook.com/BreakDRadio. The Breakdown is the show that I normally host. So I'm filling in today for Barrett, and I greatly, again, appreciate that. Look me up on Facebook too. I pretty much accept any friend requests on there almost. So look me up on Facebook, Aaron Barker, AARON. And again, facebook.com/BreakDRadio and @BreakDRadio on Twitter. This has been probably one of the highlights of my year, especially my life. Past 15 years, I've been completely consumed with trying to get on talk radio. And I've hosted my own show, but it was just in my delivery truck, and I was yelling at the radio and taking phone calls that didn't exist. And I looked like a crazy man when I was driving down the road. So thank you for making me look like a crazy man in a studio and not while I'm driving. It's been an absolute pleasure, a complete blast. Corey, you did a great job. Brian did a great job. Barrett, thank you very much again. Mike, thank you so much. Everybody in the chat room, crusadechannel.com. Go there and sign up for Founding Brother Pass. Get the on-demand content app access. Get 30 days free plus $20 to spend in the Founders Trading Post. Get you some cigars and some books. Amazing stuff there. Looking forward to seeing y'all again. Have a great day. And until next time, make Christ supremely valuable.